As the hymn says, Christ was born to save. The gift that God gave us was personal, powerful, and cosmically redemptive. It changes everything. It has changed everything. It will change everything. But it's not always so with the gifts that we give to each other, is it? Let's be honest. There's a lot of misfires on Christmas morning when the presents are opened. And some of you know this, but I once gave my wife Nancy an electric can opener and a gift card to a sandwich shop for Christmas. It's a decision that will now live in infamy in my household. Perhaps the greatest story of a Christmas gift misfire comes from the famous short story of O. Henry. The story is entitled The Gift of the Magi. And it tells the wondrous tale of young Jim Dillingham and his wife, Adela, who lived in a very modest apartment as they started out their married life together. They had very few possessions. In fact, the only thing they had that they really treasured, materially speaking, was Della's long, beautiful hair, which was almost down to her knees, and Jim's shiny gold watch, which had belonged to his father and his grandfather before him. That was really all their earthly treasure. On Christmas Eve, with only $1.87 in her hand and desperate to find a gift for her husband, Della sells her hair for $20 to a nearby hairdresser and eventually finds a platinum chain for Jim's watch for $21. Satisfied that she had gotten him the perfect gift, Della runs home and begins to prepare the pork chops for supper. At 7 o'clock, Della sits at the table near the door, waiting for Jim to come home. He's unusually late, but finally Jim walks in and immediately stops short at the sight of his beloved Della with her closely cropped hair. Della, who had previously prayed silently that she was still going to be pretty to her husband, even after her haircut. Della then admits to Jim that she sold her hair to buy him his present. And then Jim gives Della her present, an assortment of expensive hair combs, made all but useless now because her hair was so short. Della then shows Jim the chain she bought for him, and Jim responds by saying he had sold his watch to get money for her expensive handmade hair combs. Although Jim and Della are now left with gifts that neither one can really use, they do realize how far they're willing to go to show their love for one another and how priceless their mutual love really is. Even though they gave what turned out to be unneeded gifts to each other, they both felt privileged to be so well loved by another person. And so it seems that in human gift giving, it really is the thought and the self-sacrificial love behind it that matters the most. And what the O. Henry story, I think, also suggests to us is something we all intuitively know, that we cannot ever give one another the perfect gift. Even when we've done very well indeed and have a well-chosen gift, that gift in itself does not change the essential moral or spiritual condition of anyone's life. Sinners cannot give other sinners, even our most beloved fellow sinners, material gifts that are so perfect that they fundamentally reorient and reorder our lives. And sometimes I think when we try to do that, when we try to give the perfect gift, we only can make matters worse. I heard a report this week, maybe some of you did too, on the radio about a study done of married couples and their behavior during the holidays. Perhaps a sensitive subject for some of us tonight. It seems that the wives tend to try to be the keepers of the traditions and the customs, typically, in the household. They do the most elaborate decorating of the home. They are involved much more in the baking and preparing for suppers and that sort of thing during the season than their husbands do. And so what the overly busy wives would most value in that is their husband's help with a lot of the small details of preparation. But the husbands, not surprisingly, perhaps, aren't as interested in all that. And realizing that they've gotten into the doghouse for not helping with the little things, They then rush out at the last minute and try to buy something so big, so perfect, so over the top that she'll really know how much he loves her and he will escape from the marital doghouse. Which, by the way, is not a new strategy. If you remember, this is exactly what Jacob did to assuage Esau, his estranged brother, by sending gifts ahead of him, soften him up, as it were. Now, I'm sure that none of this applies to you brothers here tonight. But that same study said that such grandiose giving often backfires more than it helps, as wives then get stressed about how much was spent on them and how it affects the family budget. Then the husband, they didn't have this in the study, but I can just see it. The husband goes away grumbling, "I can't win," feeling sorry for himself. We cannot give to each other the perfect gift, the gift that makes all the difference in the world, a redemptive gift. But the gospel of God is that God can do that, and that God has done that in Jesus Christ, born to Mary. When the Apostle Paul says to the Corinthian church, "Thanks be to God for His unspeakable gift," he means that the gift is so rich, it is so multidimensional, it is so profound, that one cannot possibly name all that it is to one. For this gift comes from a God who is omniscient, knowing everything and all our needs at all times. From a God who is omnipotent, having all power to create and give gifts at any sort of time, any way or manner He chooses. God is also omnisapient, all-wise, knowing what we most need and when we most need it. God is also omnibenevolent, desiring as our Father to give us nothing but good gifts. When He gives the unspeakable gift of His Son Jesus Christ, there is no misfiring. There is no misunderstanding. There is no bad motive. There is no unintended effect. There are no crossed wires. He is the perfect giver. And in the Beloved, Jesus the Son, He has given us the perfect gift. So I want you to ponder it anew tonight. In order to bring the knowledge of God to man, God does something that no religion ever anticipated or ever even dared hope for, that the true God of all creation becomes nothing less than a true man. The Creator, binding Himself to space and time and to a personality and to flesh. The Word becoming flesh and dwelling in our midst, in humble obscurity, yet full of divine grace and wisdom. Jesus the Word is perfectly suited to our condition, being made like us in every way and being tempted in every way as we are, yet without sin, and being made complete, the Bible teaches, through His suffering. He is made into a perfectly sympathetic high priest to our fallen and frail human condition. Being a fully human being, He can also represent us together before God, even becoming a perfect substitute for our sinful humanity on the punitive cross of Calvary, bearing the wrath of God for us who are united to Him by grace alone, through faith alone. As true God, Jesus' one death can atone for the sins of all who come to Him by faith. As all the elect in every age of world history are made righteous through Him and His once for all self-oblation on the cross. When He is raised from the dead, it is a perfect sign of His transcendent victory and a perfect promise of our own resurrections and glorification in Him. When He ascends to the right hand of the Almighty God, remaining true man, He becomes our flesh in heaven, a complete human being, now governing the universe for our benefit and for His own ultimate vindication and glory in this hateful world. This is the perfect gift. Christ is the perfect gift. In our sinfulness, He gives us righteousness. In our guilt, He gives us pardon, forgiveness. In our lostness, He gives us adoption as sons. In our alienation, He gives us reconciliation and peace, even friendship with God and man. In our weakness, He gives us new strength. In our despair, He gives us gospel promises to hope in. In our human sorrow, He gives us heavenly joy. In our grief, He gives us consolation. And in our dying, He gives His people indestructible life. Oh, this is the perfect gift. This is the unspeakable gift of the ages. This is not a mere, it's the thought that counts kind of nice gesture from God that misfired in some way. I think, by the way, that is what a century of theological liberalism has bequeathed to the church in America. Theological liberalism proclaims a Jesus who comes to live among us and die on the cross just to show us how much He loves us. As though a person dying without any effect, dying without any cosmic result, dying without satisfying the wrath of God, because God is not wrathful, because God is not holy, as the Bible would say He is holy. As though such an empty, purposeless death on the grinding wheel of cruel human history is somehow actually a gesture of love for us. Such a theology of a grand but ultimately empty gesture is bankrupt. And it makes the unspeakable gift of Christ into nothing more than a sentimental gesture intended by God to inspire us to work in a soup kitchen or vote correctly or recycle our plastic or some other calls of the day. And sad to say, some of our fellow evangelicals, our evangelical churches, have taken it in a similar direction, saying that He came to give us nothing but spiritual self-esteem and personal victory in this little discreet aspect of life or that. There's truth in that, but it is true that Christ shows us the love of God for us. He displays it. Romans 5:8 says, God demonstrates His love for us, that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. But the whole destiny of the universe, our whole salvation, the entire blessedness of the gift given by God hinges on that little three-letter word, for. When we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. And the full meaning of that little word for is the entire perfection of the gift God gave at the first Christmas. It speaks of a real demonstration of His substantial, life-changing, and soul-transformative love as He died for us by willingly, freely, and without any compulsion other than His love, interposed His precious blood to divert the wrath of God upon Himself, to bring it to Himself, and thereby to cleanse our souls from sin forever, making us through the whole process finally fit for heaven to live with Him there. The real goal of the great Christmas gift is more than to give us seasonal joy, beloved. It's that. Paul says in Romans 8 that the real goal of the gift is to make us like the gift, conform to the image of His own Son, to make us Christ-like, to make us holy. Both the position of our persons before God and the condition of our souls under and in God are actually truly changed by this spectacular, mighty gift. It is no empty, vain gesture or O. Henry misfire that made God light up those hills in Judea 20 centuries ago with divine light. As the last hit Christmas hymn we sang says, Jesus Christ was born for this. He hath opened heaven's door, and man is blessed forevermore. For Christ was born to save. Christ was born to save. My friends, You cannot truly know the unspeakable gift of Christmas without being saved by Him. Like children who want to open their Christmas gifts before the appointed time, before the season of their opening. Sometimes we think we can totally comprehend Christ and understand Him before ever believing in Him, that we can make a life of faith safe for us by studying Him hard enough and comprehending His message deeply enough to know who He is before we ever commit to follow Him with the first step of discipleship. But I'm here to tell you it is not so. The greatest knowledge of Christ comes from bowing before Him as Lord and gladly receiving Him as Savior. And you already know enough of that from just tonight's music and from this short message to do that much. The great intellectual and pastoral leader of the early church, Augustine of Hippo, once said, "I do not seek to understand that I may believe, but I believe in order that I might understand." Do you believe in the gift God has given the world? You'll never understand Him until you do follow after Him with faith. I think the gift Himself is asking that of us tonight. Do we believe in the unspeakable, perfect gift that God has given? Everything will depend on how we answer that one question. We may find ourselves loving the season more than we did before. We may find ourselves willing to be more charitable to the gifts that people give us with good intentions. You know, when the Samaritan woman at the well hesitated to give Jesus a drink of water from the well, she being a woman, he being a man, she being a Samaritan, he a Jew, Jesus said to her, "If you knew the gift of God, and who it is who says to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked Him, and He would give you living water." Do we know the gift? With surrendered faith, believe tonight in the inexpressible gift God has given. And then you will know Him. You will know Him, and you will be enabled to sing forever with the saints, "Joy to the world, the Lord is come. Let earth receive her King."